Join the chorus. It's time for another North Melbourne Footy Club update with Dean Vasek and special guests on Hashtag Kangaroos.
Hi, this is Ben McKay from the North Melbourne Footy Club, and you're listening to another episode of the Hashtag Kangaroos podcast. Here is your host, Dean.
Thank you, Ben McKay. Welcome to another episode. My name is Dean Vasek. You can find me on Twitter at Hashtag Kangaroos or on Instagram at Hashtag Kangaroos podcast. Also on TikTok as well. Not that I've got any idea what I'm doing there, at Hashtag Kangaroos 1. So back with the boys today, Frank, Jesse and Mark, to talk about our impressive performance over the weekend against the Sydney Swans. A really gritty and unfortunate loss in the end, but there's a lot of positives to get out of the game. We talked about the umpiring and how we got screwed at Marvel Stadium again after the Good Friday screw job. Plenty to talk about. It was a big chat. It went for pretty much an hour. So I won't hold you up anymore. Let's bring on the boys right now.
Gentlemen, welcome back tonight. Let's get straight to it. I want to go back before the game of last Thursday with Clarko stepping aside indefinitely with all the First Nations issues and all that has caused him enough stress. Jesse, what were your thoughts of it when that happened?
Look, my immediate reaction was shock, but that quickly. After a few minutes, I think it didn't really surprise me. He's obviously been very vocal in his press conferences the last couple of weeks, in particular. I think you could kind of see the strain on him. I thought it was unfortunate that as stories came out about him throwing chairs in the rooms and stuff like that, I didn't think that was really required, appropriate, or needed. But look, I didn't think it surprised. After the initial shock worn off, it didn't really surprise me at all. I can imagine the type of pressure that he is under. So while it was obviously disappointing, it was good to see him put his hand up and take a break, because from a club first perspective, we obviously weren't getting the most out of him given the mindset he was in, and we need a coach in the stage that we're at to be 100% focused on the club. I think we're really, really lucky to have who we have as a caretaker. Really, really lucky. A lot of clubs don't have a coach who's been at two different clubs as a senior coach, who I think is a really good operator and well-respected. So, him being able to jump into the chair is fantastic. Can only wish, obviously, the best for Clarko and... it was nice to see the fans show their support for him during the game. So in what would be a really difficult time for him and everyone involved, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. He's probably his immediate family are probably ones that have probably suffered the longest. And he's probably, a lot of relationships have been fractured by this as well. Not just with the Hawthorn Football Club, but obviously close friends have probably, believe what they've read and so forth. So, yeah, hopefully, this is a first step to, a healing process for him. Now, Frank, there was a lot of talk, like Jesse said, that he about having to go at the players at halftime against the Power last week, where he was losing control of the situation and maybe even losing the players the way we were going. But I think this is the best thing for him, like Jesse said, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, Dean. And look, I think all of us knew what we were getting into with Clarko. I mean, it's not like he was a mild-mannered coach at Hawthorn. There's hours and hours of footage of him putting his fist through walls and things like that. So we know, I certainly knew that at some point he'd probably boil over, knowing where our list was at and what he wanted. If it was just that reaction at half time that he felt was the tipping point, then yep, absolutely. But I think he's probably taken a break for a number of other issues that have been building as well, and that might have just been the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably, look, we've seen it with Damien Hardwick in the last 24 hours and just the strain it's had on him. I think coaching can only go so far. I think, it's a 10 to 12 years doing it straight. Well, Clarkson did it for 17 years straight, had a year off and then trying to get back into it. So he's done it for a very long time and probably just he feels drained at the moment. Todd Viney said he couldn't sleep as well. He wasn't sleeping, so it was affecting him. And we all know that you can't function at your best if you're not getting enough rest. So, yeah, hopefully, like I said before, this is the start of the healing process. Now, Mark, it looks like the AFL are trying to clear this up and just everyone go about their business like nothing's happened. But I think this has the potential to get messy, doesn't it?
Well, if it's possible for it to get even more messy than it already is, I'm absolutely flabbergasted. The whole thing could take 8 months and it's taken Clarkson to have to step away for the AFL to go, okay, maybe we'll have to abandon this contrived result we've tried to get to where, despite a lack of evidence or what appears to be a severe lack of evidence from what's being reported, the coaches haven't been able to get the evidence from Hawthorne because under privacy laws, the accusers or the families have blocked it getting out. And the end result is this has dragged on for 8 months, put crazy strain on the coaches and their families. And I don't think anyone should be surprised with what happened last week with Alistair. And in terms of, what made me even more angry is that the AFL suddenly turn around and go, okay, well, if it's caused him this much trouble, we better close the whole thing down. We'll just give away the mediation. I mean, and now I hear Gil McLachlan still trying to ring people and get the results, try and get it sorted out. Either they're guilty or they're not guilty. Mm. I don't know what all this trying to get a group hug thing happening and everyone's happy. It was never going to end with everyone happy. There's no winners at all in the whole thing to start with. And secondly, they've been accused of heinous acts as part of this, and they either did them or they didn't do them. AFL needs to come out and say, we've either got the evidence that they did it, or we have evidence that they didn't do it, or we can't find any evidence, full stop. Stop mucking around and putting people through this and let them get on with their lives. I would think the next step will be the AFL will walk away from it because they've already ballsed it up completely after Hawthorne completely ballsed it up. The families have then got the choice. They can either go to court, present evidence, and go under oath, and I don't believe that's likely to happen at the way things are looking. And so I think the most likely thing is now that Clarkson will, and the coaches, the other two, Burt and Fagan, will have to make a decision now whether they proceed with defamation, which they have absolutely every right to do, particularly against the ABC. But I get the feeling Clarkson's going to have a crack at Hawthorne as well, potentially. And that might take up some time and energy. So I don't know whether that forms part of this or not. But, I'm very confident and hopeful that he'll be back at some point this season. It's just a question of when. And I agree with the other guys that it's obviously great to have Ratten in that spot. I also think the stress that he was under started to take a toll on the players to some extent because he probably wasn't himself. And him having that break obviously released some tension and that came out in the guys probably having a little bit more freedom with the way they played. And I don't know if you guys listened to Sheasel and George Wardlaw talking today on with James Brayshaw on Triple M. And the Rush Hour is a fantastic interview, but they clearly love Clarkson and they said they were playing for him on the weekend. So that was great to hear.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's already built strong relationships, you can tell, with young guys. So, they're obviously very pleased with him. Harry Sheasel grew up idolising Hawthorne, so I think it's a real honour that he's got him as a coach now. And, it might take a while. Like, there's no rush at the end of the day. Like you boys have said, we're in capable hands with Brett Ratten. It depends. Brett Ratten might only want to do this for a month or two before he sort of says, look, I just want to go back to part-time because that's just not what I signed up for. But if he wants to continue for a little bit longer and if Clarkson feels like he wants a holiday after this is all settled, he can come back first day of pre-season if he wants to have a few months off fully focused going into next season. You still don't want to, we'll have a couple weeks off and then come back and still have this hanging over his head because coaching you know, needs your full focus. So we'll wait and see, I guess, with all that. Well, we'll go to more positive things that happened on the field. Jesse, I certainly was thinking in the first 10 minutes that this has the potential to get real ugly real quickly. I think it was 2 goals, 5-17. The uncontested possessions were minus 11, contested possessions minus 10. We looked really flat at the start. But I think the response after that was fantastic, and I felt like we controlled the game after that.
Yeah, look, couldn't see it coming, could you? It looked like it was going to be a bit like the previous, you know, few games. We just, you know, I was reading. I didn't go to the game, unfortunately. I was away on the weekend, so I was lucky enough. I was watching the game, and I had Twitter up, and I was just reading everyone's comments about, geez, this could really get ugly, and you know, this could end up being, you know, a real bad loss. And it looked like it. They were absolutely dominating us for that first 10 to 12 minutes, and they should have really put more score on the board, Sydney. They just couldn't kick straight. And then almost out of nowhere, we responded. And it honestly, a big part of that comeback felt like it came from Jai Simkin. I thought he was superb on the weekend. I thought after he had been challenged, we talked about this last week, but after he'd been challenged and some of his efforts had been highlighted by Kingy and Robbo and et cetera, I thought he really, really stood up. He attacked the contest. He scored 2 goals. You know, he was just, he led from the front. And then you just had the kids. You know, we'll talk about it a little bit more later, but our midfield dynamic seemed completely different. There was energy all over the field, and it was like a completely different side from about 15 minutes into the quarter. And it wasn't just a response. I mean, we didn't just draw even with them. We were able to push ahead. We beat them in, you know, a lot of areas for the remainder of the game. So it was an extremely mature response, I thought, you know, being down, you know, almost down and out in the first 10 minutes, but mature response. It was a very, very, very aggressive response to the type of football we were playing, the transition we were playing. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, we won pretty much all of the major stats with the exception of free kicks, but we'll get to that at another point. But we absolutely dominated the clearances, which albeit they had a few injuries, but we dominated the clearances, dominated in the hitouts. The only thing we couldn't do was rotations, apparently. But yeah, look, apart from the first 10 minutes, guys, I thought we were super impressive. And while I was ultra disappointed after the game, I walked away with more positives this week than I have, you know, than I've had in a few weeks.
Oh, definitely. Frank, I was getting ready to build a statue at the front of Arden Street of George Wardwell. That was a really impressive debut. 16 possessions, 6 clearances, 9 tackles, 77 pressure points, which was a game high through champion data. I mean, how good was he, really?
Oh, I just loved his urgency, Dean. That was the thing that struck me the most, was his desperation to get the ball or stop the person who had the ball. I know he had a couple of turnovers here and there, but just his willingness to get involved so early in the game was just fantastic. And you still look at him now, and I think he looks like a reasonably developed 16-year-old. So you think if he puts another 4 or 5 kilos on, he'll be an absolute demon there in the middle of that ground. So he was really good.
He was unbelievable. Mark, he's re-signed for 4 years now, so an extra 2 years to the 2-year rookie contract. This guy could be a culture setter. That's how high I rate him, couldn't he? With how he attacks the ball and just like his repeat efforts going after the ball, like 2, 3, 4 efforts, he's relentless, isn't he?
Oh yeah, I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked by how impressive he was. I haven't seen an 18-year-old debut and go into the midfield in modern times. I can't remember a more impressive debut from a midfielder. So often they go in and play high half forward. He went straight in as an 18-year-old in their first season and played as a contested beast. It's just unheard of. 9 tackles. I mean, most of his possessions were contested. He's got an explosive power and speed for an 18-year-old that I was shocked by. That's, people talk about players being like Dangerfield. I'm going to bring up Jason Horne-Francis, but this guy really is. He reminds me of Dangerfield at his peak, playing as an 18-year-old. Now I'm getting a bit carried away because he had 16 possessions and not 32. But the way he played and the way he wins his own ball and the explosiveness he's got, and just I just think the energy he brought to the team and the influence he had on the team. To me, he looked like a leader right from his first 10 minutes in the game. So I could not be more excited about he and Sheasel as a combination. The fact that they're best mates, or they've become best mates, and just hearing them being interviewed tonight, I'm just so thrilled for the club that they've got two young kids of that quality that have extended by 2 years. And I just thought it was a changing moment for the club on the weekend, those two coming in. And it just so happened that Phillips played the way he did. And I thought the energy Ford brought to the team as well as another young player, just talking about the first quarter and when things changed. And I think very fair to say it was a great point about Simpkin that Jesse made. But I think he was the major catalyst for us to come back in that first quarter. I agree with that. But the energy the kids brought was just brilliant. And he led that by a long way. He was amazing.
Yeah, no, it was unbelievable. We'll talk a bit more about midfield soon. Jesse, we might as well go to the negative and the umpiring. I mean, I don't like to comment on umpiring because I just don't think they have that much influence on the game. But when you watch a VFL game and the standard is so much better than the AFL, you can't help but be frustrated, can you?
Look, I've maintained this all year. You know, I'm a bit the same as you, and I'm assuming all of you guys, where I don't like to blame the umpires at all. I think once a week I get emotional, write a tweet about the umpires, and then I delete it 2 minutes later because I think I'm being silly. I didn't delete mine after the weekend. I thought it was poor. There were free kicks that Sydney should have got that they missed as well. I can't help but think that adding that fourth umpire has absolutely wreaked chaos. And, you know, I saw some valid points during the week from people saying that the depth of talent isn't there and you're adding extra coaches, umpires, when it's a part-time gig. They're missing free kicks. They're confused where they're meant to stand. I'm adamant on that they're not yet comfortable with their positioning, with who should be calling things. It's just chaotic out there. You don't know what the result's going to be. That one in the – that holding the ball that should have been paid against the Sydney player where he clearly dropped the football in – and I think it was 5 metres from an umpire. I don't even know how to describe that. So, I don't want to focus on our game. I watch most games most weeks, I'd like to say, when I'm not, you know, out and about. And – I honestly have to say that the quality of umpiring has gone down this year. And I think a lot of people on, not just social media, but a lot of people in the media tend to agree with that opinion. It's extremely frustrating. It's extremely frustrating as a viewer during a neutral game. And it's extremely frustrating for your club when you're on the wrong end of it. And I don't think that cost us the game. You know, there was definitely a few goals they got from it, but I'm not going to say that cost us the game. But it wasn't up to the required standard. And to your point, you know, the VFL umpiring looks better, and I don't have an answer for that. Is there only, and you guys might have the answer to this, is there only 3 umpires in the VFL games as opposed to 4?
I'm not too sure, to be honest with you. I don't really look that closely. It's a bit hard to see on the screen, but I think there's only 3. If I had to take a guess, but someone else, maybe a listener, might be able to correct me on that. Unless either of you guys know, Frank, do you know anything about that?
No, and believe it or not, I know a VFL umpire.
Inquire, please.
But you'll find out before I get in front of him. But yeah, no, it's a good point.
Yeah, I'd love to know it because you know your point's 100% valid. Then I've watched a lot of VFL this year. One because you know North Melbourne's VFL team's been pretty decent, and during the poorer weeks, it's been good watching you know some of the younger players play. And two, I've been watching a lot of the Williamstown games for you know a couple of other reasons. But it's just bizarre. The game itself is not as high a quality. I've never watched one of them and gone, Jesus, that umpire's made a terrible decision. And in the AFL, you know, I was sick the week before last, so I ended up, you know, watching most of the games that weekend in bed. And every single game, I think I walked away and there might have been one for the round where I walked around and I walked away and thought, geez, that, you know, that game was umpired well. So they need to sort it out. They need to sort it out.
Yeah, I think they should go back to three, personally. Like you said, I don't think that there's enough quality there to have four on the ground, and they do seem confused about punting decisions. I mean, Frank, that last decision pretty much summed up the game of umpiring. I mean, he was so inconsistent all game, and no one on the ground knew what happened. Look, I know Jesse said it didn't cost us a game, but I think it was pretty close to costing us a game with some of those decisions. A lot of holding the balls, they seem to get away with the Swans. And, yeah, there was a few others as well. Paul Curtis getting a free kick for being too strong in the goal square. There's a number of others I could count. Like Hugh Greenwood got cleaned up in the centre square. I think it was Aaron Francis in the first quarter. Came pretty late, cleaned him up. Should have been a 50-metre penalty, which would have given him a scoring shot. And Lee Fisher, who I'll talk about in a second with Mark, just completely oblivious, said, no, it's in the marking contest. Am I being a bit too harsh there, Frank, and whinging about the umpires?
Oh, I think we all do it, Dean, especially when it's a game that gets decided in the last minute. We all look back on decisions like that. I sat with a couple of good friends who are Swan supporters. There was one particular one that was given to Nick Larkey that it resulted in a goal that I couldn't see an infringement. But going the other way, there was certainly a couple that we didn't receive that left me scratching my head. But I think you probably just look at it a bit closer when it's literally the game's lost in the last 30 seconds.
The decision was paid with 40 seconds to go. Mark, I can't remember Lee Fisher ever umpiring a decent quality football match, let alone a decent game. And he isn't up to AFL standard of umpiring. He seems to get a lot of our games because we, you know, like the weekend, our game was probably the poorest as far as 17th versus 14th. He seems to get Sunday Twilight games. Same goes for Elaney as well. She isn't up to it. But the other guy was just as bad as well. I mean, it doesn't seem like, you know, I talked about the VFL. It doesn't seem like there's a policy of dropping umpires and putting them up. They seem to get a gig every week, which I find very interesting, to say the least, Mark. What do you think about that? Should umpires like Lee Fisher, I mean, surely he's not getting good reviews, should he get dropped to the VFL?
This is interesting, actually, Dino, because you've never asked me about umpires before, and I have to be honest. I'm the worst person you could ever ask this question to. I've got no idea which umpire is making what decision when. So I don't even know who the good umpires are in the AFL and who aren't. That is one thing I don't get. I'll get frustrated by a specific decision. For example, Curtis, I thought, took a perfectly legitimate mark in the goal square and it got taken off him when players, forwards, do exactly what he did every week. That one really annoyed me because I thought that was just a stolen goal, basically. But I generally don't take a lot of notice of umpiring decisions because I just always feel like it always generally evens itself out. It never feels like that if you're supporting one team. You always feel like the bad ones go against you. But I will say that the standard has got a lot worse with the four umpires. I don't think that's working at all. I don't know whether that means the depth just isn't there or it's creating confusion or they're just trying to get their share of decisions in. I couldn't tell you, but it's not working. I mean, and I'm basing that as much on feedback from the general public, as much about North supporters not liking it. But I mean, the overwhelming feeling out of the game on the weekend was that the umpiring was a disaster. And I keep hearing that from other supporters at other games. So it seems to be a general trend. But I couldn't answer you about specific umpires. I'd just be making it up, mate.
No, fair enough. Yeah, no. So, I mean, they all seem to be as bad as each other sometimes. But, you know, the ones that do the grand finals, generally, like, I think it's Matt Stevic or something like that, and there's a couple others. The ones that generally have done a few grand finals, they get the big games, the Collingwood games and so forth, and we can send...
Well, that's a good point.
It's a valid point you make there, mate. Absolutely a valid point. Yeah. The good umpires always seem to get the big games. And just to chime in really quickly on the two names that you pointed out, no, neither of them are AFL standard umpires. There is a lot of good umpires. I as I've said, you know, the standard of umpiring is down, but there are some quality umpires in the AFL. And, you know, the names that you, you know, said that generally the ones that get the big games, that get the grand finals, etc., you know, they're quality umpires. But Lee Fisher's, you know, taking the piss, really. He if he was a player, he would have been relegated to the thirds. He's so far off the pace. And Elaney, like, she does not make... I don't know if she'd like, if she has a personal vendetta against us. Every time we seem to get her, I get frustrated. She's the only umpire...
She's not related to Kane Corns, is she?
I'll have to look it up. But, yeah, she's the only umpire that if she's umpiring a North game, I get frustrated in advance because it always seems like we end up on the rough end of her. And maybe that's why I'm judging her umpiring so harshly, but she seems to just miss a lot of free kicks. Well, you know, Lee Fisher just, I think, sometimes is falls asleep, misses the play, and then thinks he should call something. It's just, yeah, that's not good enough.
No, it's definitely not good enough, especially in the high pressure industry. I remember Elaney's first game she ever did. Brent Brown took a clean contested mark and she didn't pay it a mark. That's going back a long time ago in Hobart. That's going back a number of years ago. And I think, like you said, Jesse, she's probably just got a personal vendetta against it because she seems to always get our games as well now. So, and that's the price you pay for being 17th on the ladder. Anyways, we'll go back to the positives. We've had our whinge about them. Let's go to the back line. I thought after a slow start in the first half, it gelled really well in the second half, didn't it, Jesse?
Oh, absolutely. I thought, you know, early Buddy looked on. I think he was a bit, I don't think Logue was the right matchup for him early in the game. But I understand he played a really good game against him last year for Fremantle, I believe, and that's probably why he got the early job on him. But I thought Mackay was fantastic. He was, you know, he had his second decent week, in my opinion. He looks like he's in a bit more form, a bit more confidence. He was able to slow Buddy down. But the back line overall was extremely solid. You know, we removed, you know, Zeeble was good again. Luke McDonald, who was someone that we've, you know, obviously said that, we haven't criticised, but we've said that he's had not as effective of a year. He went to Papley, and did anyone notice Papley was playing? Oh, I didn't.
I noticed he got a free kick for the trainer running across. That was about it.
Yeah. Well, God, don't get me started on that one. I decided not to comment on that one, but he didn't do anything. Luke McDonald completely shut him out of the game. And I thought the back line was superb. They kept Sydney to a decently low score when they were on early. We were able to contain them for the most part. And, you know, Papley, who is a small forward, and small forwards are generally the ones that tear us to shreds, got absolutely blanketed. And, you know, we removed Cheezel from that and we were able to still get really good transition. I don't think Hall was hacking his kicks as much. I thought he was actually pretty clean with his disposal. So that's a tick. I actually think in my initial team for next week, I don't have Aiden Corr returning. I thought the team was in, I thought the back line looked really, really solid.
Yeah, definitely. Tom Papley, only 11 possessions. That's some of them in the midfield as well. Only one scoring involvement for the game. No scoring shots. So, yeah, big win for Luke McDonald. So, yeah, no, it's really positive signs. Frank, what did you think of Tom Powell in the back line?
Yeah. Maybe it was an effort to try and get him into the game because he has been a bit slow to get going this year. In a lot of the games. I didn't hate it. I don't think that's his natural spot. But, you know, I don't mind us trying some different things to try and get players' confidence up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess with the depth of midfield, you got, you know, we've got Wardlaw coming into the team. Shees will spend a bit of time in the midfield. You got Hugh Greenwood, Will Phillips. You know, LDU's still got to come back in as well. And maybe, you know, one or two others that can go through there. He might have to find a new position just for the next month or so. So it's not a bad time to trial that. Was fairly quiet. Didn't give us too much drive, but kicked a nice goal in the last quarter. So I don't mind sticking with that for the next few weeks and see where we go with that.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. Mark, our back six looks better with our four talls. And I think Logue, Mackay and Zeeble are your talls there. And it looks better from a system point of view, doesn't it? Like Jesse said, I can't see Aiden Corr coming back this week.
No, not from a balance point of view. I thought about this during the week and thought when you look back to the West Coast game and even the Carlton game where we were too short, we were very short of tall defenders. We've actually played okay in terms of getting the ball out of our back line when we haven't had that extra tall. So having Hall and Powell back there, Bergman I thought was superb. And I just love the way he distributes the ball. He just doesn't make mistakes, that guy. He's going to be a star for us. I totally agree. My only concern with Corey is, of course, is that if Mackay decided to leave, you'd probably rather be getting Corey into the side and Mackay out, but you can't do that, of course. That'd be ridiculous. But, I think purely on form and the way this season's panned out, I'd be leaving it Mackay and Logue back there. And to be honest with you, unless there's an injury, I don't know how Corr comes back in. Or we play against a very tall forward line. No, certainly not this week. And there's not many sides that are playing really tall forward lines at the moment. It's trending the other way, if anything. It's usually two talls and then mediums and small forwards to try and lock the ball in. So, and I felt like, and we were the same in that regard this week too. I totally agree. I think we look more solid. I think we're not getting outmarked badly in that forward line doing that. Zeeble's having a season which completely shocks me. I didn't think he'd be in our best 22, but he's certainly proven me very wrong. Again, another great game. You know, between he and McDonald, they cut out two of their guns on the forward line completely. Heaney and Papley, as you said. So, I thought the back line was terrific. So, no complaints there. I can't see why they'd change it. Unless they bring Taron Thomas into the back line, which means they'd probably play Powell elsewhere. But he could go on. He can just as easily play on the wing and half forward as well as mid.
Well, that's where he's played on a weekend. So, he's playing midfield and forward half. So, I'm not too sure if he can. We'll talk about him later. Midfield. We smashed the grand finals. Grand finalists in the middle, didn't we, Jesse? I mean, clearances were 47-27. Centre clearances were 18-8. This is a real confidence boost for players like Sheasel, Wardlaw, Will Phillips, and just gives them tremendous belief going forward, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, I've been critical of the midfield the last few weeks, and I think we've stated that they've looked a bit one-paced and a bit one-dimensional. And I thought this week we had a lot of strings to our bow. It looks like a completely different midfield. The youth in there, I was so happy that Rats played Sheasel forward / mid. You know, he added a lot of energy. And, you know, I honestly didn't expect him to be playing forward mid and still rack up 25-odd disposals. And he could have kicked four goals. He could have added an incredible game. And he still had a really good game. So, you know, his energy in the midfield and Wardlaw, gee, God, what do you say about Wardlaw? I think I've mentioned this before. I play basketball with Emma Carney's brother, and we play on a Monday night. And we were talking about Wardlaw last night, and he said that Emma, the thing around the club and the thing that has really shocked, you know, Emma obviously works in a development role for younger kids for the men, and the thing that shocks them is just his absolute willingness to attack a contest. And you know, you'll get a kid in football who will make a mistake, and then you've got to teach them, you know, that's okay if you shank a kick or something, just make sure you work to the next contest, where you don't need to teach Wardlaw that. And I think we saw that on the weekend, that, and I think Viney actually said it in the pregame, he's the type of player that if he gets something wrong, or if he makes a mistake, or if he loses a contest, you better watch out that next contest. And we saw that on the weekend. I think he gave away a high free kick, smacking probably it was Luke Parker, to be honest, but he made like a little error, and then the next contest he gave away a free kick and really attacked the contest. And that's the thing that the club, that they're talking about from, you know, inside the club, and that they haven't seen before. That's what's coming out of our coaching staff, that they haven't seen a player who has such a hunger and willingness to not necessarily improve, but to just make sure they get to that next contest, and that they make up for, you know, any errors they might have had, or make sure they affect the next contest. His willingness on the ball to attack the ball, to attack the player. I think the biggest thing is, and we've said this, our pressure is general. I think we're the second lowest team in the competition for pressure. And, you know, we know that we're a pretty poor tackling team. Him and Greenwood in the midfield at various times means that we always have a high pressure midfielder in there. We have someone who is absolutely going to give it their all to tackle or attack the player or put pressure on the player. And I think that showed up. I think it was one point in the third quarter, our pressure rating was over the Fox, whatever Fox Sports uses their meter. It was beyond the meter. And I haven't seen the last time that we've actually done that. And, you know, obviously the rest of the team contributed to that. But I think having Wardlaw and Greenlaw in that, and Greenwood in that mix, adds a lot of pressure, a lot of tackling, etc. And then you add Shees for some class. It was a really exciting midfield. And you know, the guys said earlier that Phillips, while he didn't have a massive possession game, I think he led us for clearances. He was high impact from low possession. So I thought it was a really, really, really good effort from the midfield, led by obviously Goldstein as well in the ruck, which was great. LDU comes back into that, so that will change that mix slightly. I hope, you know, if he's when he does come back, and assuming he's at 100% fitness, you're not going to worry about making any changes. You'll obviously get him in there, and I'm sure everything will work out for good. It does make it hard to see how Cunners gets back into the mix, unfortunately, at this stage anyway, because, the midfield was bloody exciting.
Yeah, I mean, Frank, there's what really impressed me is the quality of the clearances. Usually when we get clearances, like Jesse said, it's usually with like a Cunnington, not to disrespect Cunnington anyway, or even a Simpkin. It's usually just hack kicks forward. But the way we cleared it, we were able to break away and hit lead-up targets inside 50. I thought the quality clearances made it was the big difference this week, as opposed to, you know, previous weeks. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely, Dean. And you could see it in the way Nick Larkey was probably leading in that second half, you know, far more confident up the middle of the ground. Unfortunately, there was still a couple that we didn't quite get right once we generated the clearance, but that'll come with time. It's probably a bit of fatigue as well that set in that last quarter. But there was a lot of for a midfield that hasn't played well, wouldn't have played any games together in that formation. I thought they gelled really well, and you know, they knew who to sit back, who to go through the middle, who to spread to, and it looked really exciting.
Oh, definitely did. I mean, Mark, I could get used to this. She's on Wardlaw in the midfield, and I think Phillips could be a player that does the dirty work, like Jesse said. And this enabled someone like a Bailey Scott, you'd have to say, have his best game of his career. 33 possessions, 821 metres gained, 7 clearances. I think he could be a real benefit out of this midfield as well.
Yeah, I think they played him in a slightly different role, and they mentioned it on the weekend. So I think he's played a lot more as a defensive winger, and this week he played more aggressive, more proactive. He ran forward a bit more, and boy, did it work. So he was allowed, when I say allowed, he was able to get a lot more of the ball. And I thought his speed, his distribution, everything about him looked more confident this week. So whatever, whether Rats has done that or not, you would have to think it was something that he's tweaked. I really hope they stick with that long term, because he looked like he's going to be a star for us on the wing for a long time, the way he played. And there are a few like that that played their best game for us on the weekend. So we'll talk about the forward line later. But, I loved him on the wing. I think there's an opportunity. I think at some point Shields, who's sort of tended to play a bit midfield but a lot on the wing, I think he went back there on the weekend. I think he'll be rested. So in fact, he will be rested because he's got concussion. So I think I'd like to see some different options on the other wing. I think Goat is out, obviously, at the moment with injury, so he can't play there. But I think he's another one who could play there. I think Thomas could play there. I think Powell could play there as well. There's a few. And given though, the depth of our midfield, I'd like to see a few others try it in that position, because I think it's important these days to have two really good quality wingers in an AFL side. And good quality runners in particular. And I think Scott's the answer. I'm not sure whether Curtis Taylor is on the wing. And the fact that they dropped him when we had 6 injuries suggests that they think he's got a bit of work to do. And my understanding is they want him to work on his understanding of the game plan a bit better at VFL level as well. So we'll have to see. But, yeah, very happy with Scott. I mean, that is good as anything he did last year, if not better.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, top 3 in the best in 3 of us last year. He's probably stagnated a bit this year. Probably didn't start off the year as well as we would have liked, but that was a big step forward for him. We'll go to the forward line. We got better supply this week, didn't we? With Harry Sheezel, who has a lot of class. Eddie Ford coming in there into the forward 6. It looked like it functioned really well. And a lot of it was supply up the field as well, wasn't it, Jesse?
Yeah, look, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. The supply into the forward line was really, really solid. It was better. You know, it wasn't perfect. There was definitely a lot of times where it could have been better. But I think, as you guys have said around, you know, Bailey Scott, his ability to play an attacking wing role was, you know, led to a better level of distribution. Sheezel playing higher up the ground led to a higher, you know, better level of distribution. Plus, obviously, him playing in the forward line, he showed, you know, what he showed as a junior, which is that he is a extremely damaging and scary forward. Nick Larkey was solid. Coleman Jones did exactly what we wanted us to do, you know, what we wanted him to do. He may have not kicked those 10 goals that we were hoping for in the chat last week, but I took those 2 goals from him. He had, what, 7 marks? A heap of them were probably contested. I thought it was his best game for the club. You know, Paul Curtis, again, low disposals, but, you know, I thought he did some really impressive things. That goal, obviously, was absurd. Look, let's be honest. This is the most exciting thing that I've wanted to talk about this week. Eddie Ford. I've been saying it since the preseason. They didn't bring him in. He was phenomenal. He kicked a goal. He played on the, you know, he kicked. I think his disposals were 50% defensive half, 50% offensive half. So he played, you know, on the wing at times, and then he kind of just, I don't know what he did. He just roamed around the ground and was super effective. I saw him taking marks down back, marks up the forward line. You know, he kicked a goal from a pretty, you know, decent range. He had a really solid game. I think his disposal as well, I saw he went at something like, he had 21 disposals and went at nearly 90% disposal. you know, I think a lot of our fans have said, me included, and I'm taking some credit for this, but, you know, we've said that he's the type of player that he'll play some good VFL games, but I just see him as a player who will play better quality AFL. I'm really wrapped for him. He could potentially play wing this week with Shields out. You know, obviously we've got options around Lazaro and that as well. With Zerha back, it means that, you know, that mid-size forward role isn't as much there, but it means he can rotate into that. He can when he's not getting it, he can rotate up onto the wing. So I think he showed that he had a few more strings to his bow. He was able to drift around the ground, get possessions, and he was clean with it. But yeah, look, overall, really happy with the forward line. You know, two goals each from the big forwards, a couple snags from the smalls. Sheezel, as I said, could have kicked four and further cemented that, you know, his rising star nomination for the award for the year.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Frank, one player that there's been mixed reports with, I thought he played pretty well and played his role, was Phoenix Spicer. Now, he only had the 10 touches. It didn't hit the scoreboard, but he laid 6 tackles and had 54 pressure points. I thought his pressure was really good, making defenders rush their possessions a bit. How did you see his game?
Yeah, that was probably his saving grace, Dean, to be honest, was his pressure acts, his 6 tackles. I think he's still a guy that... look, he doesn't look like he's got a lot of confidence, and he was brought to the club with that explosive speed, which he hasn't really kind of shown us, but I was really happy with the 6 tackles and the pressure act. It's a side of his game that I haven't seen in the VFL, and I've watched him pretty closely. So for him to bring that up onto the big stage, I think they would have been, obviously I don't know, staff would have been stoked with that side of his game.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I guess we're still missing that really, really small forward. I mean, Blake Drury was got subbed out halfway through the third quarter, had a poor game, probably in jeopardy to lose his spot, unfortunately. Look, it wouldn't surprise me if he gets picked again. So we're probably just still missing that little bit of a small forward, aren't we, Frank, that someone that can get it at the feet of Nick Larkey or CCJ.
Like someone that might have played for Preston and is in our VFL team now.
Well, it could be a possibility. You never
could
know.
Could be. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah. Mark, it was even better to get an even spread of goals this week. Last few weeks, it's been Larky, Steve-O and Zerha kicking all their goals, pretty much. This week, we had 10 different goal kickers, which is really good to see, isn't it?
Was. I wouldn't underestimate the impact on the forward line that both Sheezel and Wardlaw had defensively as well. They did a lot of work to hold the ball in there. They were laying tackles on our forward half, and they were buzzing around everywhere. I mean, Sheezel, you know, the couple of the goals he scored just lifted the whole side as well. But I think both those two are going to be handy around that forward line. Wardlaw for as much for his pressure and tackling, but Sheezel was doing that as well. They're both very good defensively, so I thought they've added something to the forward line. I think Curtis is going to have a breakout game. Not a breakout game, because he's already more than broken out with the talent he's got. But I think he's going to have a game where he takes over and kicks 3 or 4 goals soon. And I thought Eddie Ford was fantastic. His work rate's brilliant for a high forward. I love him in the side. I think I'd be very disappointed if he didn't play for most of the rest of the season now. I think they're going to try and find a way to get into that structure, even with Cam Zerha there. And Cam might play a little bit deeper. But Callum Coleman-Jones was terrific as well. His contest work in the air, I mean, that's what we're obviously worried we're going to miss for the rest of the season with Charlie injured. But he brought that well and contested hard around the ground as well and took some great contested marks. So that was a huge plus. And then even Goldie looked dangerous when he went down there. So they had a good mix. And it doesn't feel like we just have to bomb it on Larky's head with every entry anymore. I think there's some different avenues to goal now. And who knows, Cooper Harvey could be another one shortly.
Well, yeah, I mean, kicking 5 goals, very classy forward. All right, Jesse, we'll talk a little bit about VFL. We have Taron Thomas expected to be back this week, I think. I think he comes in, to be honest with you. Would you pick him?
Yep. Yeah. And look, I think, as I said last week, assuming that he has ticked all the boxes, which given that he's now playing VFL games and accepted back in the AFL program, you can only assume he's ticked all the boxes. Look, his form in the VFL has been really good. He plays, absolutely. Whether or not he plays wing, halfback, he'll add some versatility. So, yeah, I'm naming him.
Yeah, I agree. Frank, where would you like to see him play? I mean, he's had a few roles. In the preseason, he was playing halfback. In a VFL, he's been playing midfield, half forward. What about yourself? Where do you think we could best utilise him?
I think I'd like to see him off halfback at this stage. I don't know what his tank's like at the moment and his endurance and general fitness. But one thing we do know is he can use the ball really, really well and he's clever. So I think a role almost, the old, the old quarterback sort of role, a guy coming off halfback or even a bit deeper. That can really use the ball and isn't scared to bite off the corridor kicks would be a huge advantage to us. But like Jesse said, we all know he's got on talent alone, he gets a game, but there's a few other things that we need to make sure that he's across before he gets out there.
No, definitely. I'm sure the club's on top of all that. And he seems to be going pretty well at the moment. We haven't heard anything anyway otherwise, which is good. No news with him is good news. So, Mark, he has a lot of speed and class, like Frank said. Where would you play him if you had to play him in the seniors this week?
I'd play him off half-back, which I've been saying for 2 years, but I think it was getting closer before the unfortunate circumstances of last season and this year. But, yeah, I'd play him there. I think that would be a great way to get him into the game as well. And he's a great distributor of the ball. He's got speed and he's tough. I think he's perfectly suited there. And if that doesn't work out, you can throw him forward. You can throw him into the midfield. You can throw him on the wing. The great thing about him and his talent is he could be effective in any spot on the ground.
Yeah, I'm confident he'll get picked this week. So, yeah, and playing against Collingwood, you probably need your high-quality class players because you don't want to we don't want to take a big step forward against the Swans and then all of a sudden we play Collingwood and get an 80-point thumping. So I think you've got to go with your best 22. And Tarryn Thomas, whether you love him or hate him, he's a game-changer and he's got that potential to be. He's far too good for the VFL at the moment. From what I've seen the last couple of weeks, he looks very fit as well. One last one, boys. I want to ask you, mid-season draft coming up soon. Jesse, would you take Sam Lowson? 28-year-old or a younger developing kid that's got potential to be a 200-game player, whereas Sam Lowson, you might get 100 games out of him.
Look, I'm probably going different to what we've done in the last few years, where I think we've taken a younger player, most of the time. I'd be either going Lowson, or I'd be going Ryan, as in Luke Ryan's brother, key forward. Tall key forward. I think he's second or third in the goal kicking at the moment. So really depends, if we feel like we need another tall player because we're lacking that now that, Common's gone down for, majority of the year. CCJ is obviously coming to the side, meaning the VFL, we're kind of lacking a key forward now. Do we get him in and then we've got some depth in that area if he starts dominating, we can bring that in. Or do you go Lowson? Look, I'd be happy with either or of them. I've done a bit of research into some of the other potential people that we could pick up, but they're the two that are really going at, me at the moment. I'm not really seeing any kids that are screaming out to me. Last year it was pretty obvious who the pick one was going to be. The year before, it was pretty obvious that Edwards was going to be the pick one. So this year, it's not as clear cut. It's going to be interesting to see who we take and who West Coast takes, assuming that we go in with the second pick. But yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly hoping we get Sam Lowson. What about you, Frank? What's your thinking with it all? I don't think it's going to be life-changing towards a club. But, what are you thinking?
Well, I think the mid-season draft is there for this exact reason, to give someone an opportunity who other clubs felt couldn't play AFL football, but has shown the ability to. And I think Sam Lawson ticks every box. I think he looks like a guy that's too good for the VFL. We don't have a plethora, as you said, of small forwards that can play that role. I think he'd be a cheap and a perfect fit to fill that breach until we can develop someone to take over, you know, when he gets, or if he gets to an age where he can no longer contribute. But I'd love to see him get a go.
I'm definitely on board with that. What about you, Mark? Where do you sit on it?
That's not me. That's my 60 kilo Roddy.
I thought, geez, we put you to sleep, Mark. Geez.
He's not keen on his AFL. My only issue with Sam Lawson is that he seems like a mid-sized forward rather than a small, fast pressure forward, which is what we really lack. To me, it's more another. We've got George, we've got Ford, and we've got Zerhan, and I feel like he's a similar type of player. I think he's definitely good enough to get picked up, but I don't know if he fills a need for us as much as a key position player does, or you know, an elite small elite. It's hard to find an elite player in the mid-season draft, but a small pressure forward. My guess is we'll get a key position player, young or old. I'm not sure, but That's just my gut feel on it. I'm not sure. Sam Lawson's more than capable at AFL level from what I've seen. He looks like a very good player. So they'd be tempted, but I just feel like it's just too similar to what we've got a lot of.
Yeah, it's probably a fair point. We do have Jaden Stevenson, Paul Curtis. Yeah, they're sort of similar players that are very classy inside your forward 50. So, yeah, you're sort of getting that. But, he seems like a good kid. He's a very smart footballer. He seems to be gelling really well in the VFL. So, at the end of the day, we haven't really got too much out of the mid-season draft anyway. We've got Jacob Meswoods, Callum Dawson, can't get a game. Edwards is not looking very good in the VFL at the moment, getting two touches a week, basically.
What's happening with Dawson? Does he need to put on weight to get stronger? Last year.
Well, who does he come in for? I mean, is he out there because we're good enough? Yeah, I mean, you can't. I mean, we're talking about, Aiden Court won't be able to get a game. So, he's just down in the pecking order unless there's injuries, I guess. He's a depth player, which is nothing wrong with. He had a good second half. He was obviously emergency for the AFL team, and he came on the second half. So, for the VFL, and he helped out because they're plucking everything. They had a good some good key position players in Joel Smith. Ben Brown was playing VFL, so, and a couple of others that were quite tall back there. So he really helped out in the second half, and it was a big part of our comeback, and we almost got over the line too on the weekend. So at the moment, he's just down the pecking order, Mark.
You're quite right. I was more sort of suggesting, for him to be capable at AFL level, does he need to get stronger in the air? Because that was the only thing that I thought held him back last year, and I thought he was pretty good, was that he was just getting out-muscled and out-marked a little bit in the air. But if he's started improving that area in the VFL, then when injuries do occur, hopefully he'll be able to make the step up. But it's interesting because you're right. I mean, I keep thinking we need more key position players, but there aren't that many to fill spots in the side, so you can get a couple, and they might spend a lot of time at the VFL. But maybe on that basis, they really do. They'll take the best available, whoever they think's the most talented player in the mid-season draft. If we do take one, they haven't said either way, have they?
Not yet. I mean, you got Marnie's out for the year, so you can use that list spot on someone. Whether they do or not is up to them. But you might as well take that punt, I would think, and just, you can get a 6-month contract and see what you get out of it. Like Jesse said, maybe you get Ryan's brother. If it's a key position forward, just add a bit of depth there and give him a few games and see how we go with that. Anyways, I think I've had you boys on long enough. Jesse, did you want to add anything else before I let you go?
Nah, all good, mate. I'm looking forward to the challenge this week. It's going to be quite a challenge.
No, yeah, definitely. It's going to be a big one. What about you, Frank? Want to add anything else?
No, thank you, Dean. Just same as Jesse, looking forward to the challenge. I think it'll be a lot of hard lifting will need to be done, but hopefully the boys can put up a good performance.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully we can back it up this week. What about you, Mark? Any final thoughts?
No, I'll back the boys at $12 this week. I think we're a huge chance.
Oh, geez, that's a big call. Just to let Jesse know, Daniel Howe, just to finish yourself, 100% disposal efficiency on the weekend. 8 possessions in the last quarter as well. Had a big impact, I thought. So just thought I'd let you know, Jesse. But thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, boys. Mate.
Thanks, Dino.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks so much for coming on tonight. Mark, thank you very much.
Good on you, Dino. See you soon.
So thank you very much to those boys for coming on today's show once again. And thanks to all you Labor listeners for all the likes, retweets, and comments you all put out on the show. It's much appreciated. I couldn't do this podcast without your support. So if you can leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform you use as well, that would be awesome. I'll be back Thursday evening to preview the Collingwood game coming up. So a big game coming up this week. Hopefully we can continue the form of the Sydney game. It wasn't just a one-off, and we can put in a real competitive performance. I don't expect a win, to be honest with you. Collingwood are just a class unit. They're great to watch from a neutral perspective, but not so much when you play against them. So, yeah, look out for that show on Thursday. So that's it for today's show. So in saying that, I will leave a shout-out to Thinker at Thoughtful1 on Twitter. So bye for now, and go Roos.